when he went home back, he transcribed the third talk, the gray man, the importance of a mental awareness. He put on computers. And then now, his Dhamma Dana, Dhamma gift now to you, that talk, the importance of a mental awareness. I told him it's better for him or for us to transcribe all the talks here, and then we're going to make and do a book. I told him he said he tried. Yes. Now we have finished our 3 months, 3 weeks meditation retreats. If this retreat is 3 months, it's better. Better, but you can't stay for 3 months because you have to work. That's why I do not teach. I do not teach the 3 months, just 3 weeks. Then, when you go home back, you have to practice meditation regularly on an everyday basis. So, if you are not able to continue the practice at home, then your mindfulness and concentration will be not very much beneficial to you. And also later, also when you want to join any retreat in days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, if you practice at home, you can maintain some degree of mindfulness and concentration, which will be conducive to your concentration and mindfulness in the next retreat. And also, you may have some progress in your meditation at home if you have the sit about two or three sittings together with the walking meditation. So at home, you should keep a period of time, such as 1 hour or 2 hours, at least 30 minutes for meditation. Better to have one session in the morning, in early morning, and the other in the evening, if it's possible. If it's not possible, you should say meditate early morning at least one session. When you have 1 hour's time for meditation, first of all, you should practice walking meditation about 10 or 15 minutes as the remaining period for sitting meditation. Every sitting meditation should be preceded by walking meditation, because in the walking meditation, the lifting, pushing, and dropping movement of the foot is very distinct to concentrate on. So walking is better than sitting. But when your meditative experience is in advanced stage in a retreat or in a meditation center, but sitting is better than walking. In the beginning or at home, I think walking meditation will be better than sitting, because in the walking, the object of meditation is more distant to your mind than in sitting. So you should walk, say, about 10 or 15 minutes, and then carry over the mindfulness and concentration you have attained walking meditation until you have settled down yourselves on the seat for meditation. Then the concentration and mindfulness you attain in walking meditation will be conducive to the concentration and mindfulness in your sitting meditation. Say, if you have half an hour's time for meditation, then please walk 10 minutes and another 20 minutes for sitting. But if you have, say, 2 hours or 3 hours on such a day as Saturday, Sunday, and public holiday, then you can walk, say, 1 hour and sit 1 hour or 1.5 hour or two. In the same way, you should do in the evening if you have time enough for meditation. But what you should be careful is not to fail to note, to observe any thought arising in the sitting as well as in the walking. Only when you are able to note thoughts, thoughts become less and less, then you can concentrate your mind to a certain extent on the object. Unless the thoughts are noted, then they doesn't become less. They become worse and worse, and sometimes they are floating in their mind or direct your mind a very long time. So not to fail to note any thought, thinking, wondering, imagination, planning, seeing mental pictures, or any emotional states, such as sadness, anger, hatred, and so on. In the Westerner's mind, anger is abundant. Yes, Westerner's mind is full of anger. Their mind is very sensible to have anger, but not Eastern are not so. Even in meditation, they have a lot of anger when they are not satisfied with their practice and with any disturbance. It's very difficult. So whatever anger or sadness arises must be noted until it has disappeared. Note it very attentively, energetically. It will go away. But at home, most of the time, you have to deal with these thoughts because the home is not has not atmosphere of meditation. It's atmosphere of restlessness, because you have to do many works, you have to have the social dealings a great deal. Then, as to daily activity, meditation is not to be practiced at the meditation center or at the meditation retreat. The Buddha teaches us to apply this meditation to our daily life. So at home too, you can apply this awareness of daily activities. You need not slow down at home any actions or movements. You should do them normally, but you should be aware of what you are doing without labeling, without noting. Just be aware of it generally, not specifically. Only when you are able to slow down, you can specifically note or observe any actions or movements. But if you do anything normally or quickly, you are not able to specifically aware of. So you have to apply general awareness of what you are doing and you are daily routine at home, doing all the things normally and steadily. In this way, you can accumulate your mindfulness and your concentration gradually, and you can maintain your mindfulness and meditation to a certain extent. That's what I want to tell you as a concluding talk. Now enough. Then questions and answer. The first question is, how can we maintain progress in our practice without access to a teacher for guidance after we leave here? And how should our practice at home be structured? Yes, now I have explained you. Yes, without access to a teacher, but you have practiced now 3 weeks here, so you know the technique and you know to correct your meditative practice to a certain extent. Yes, if there's a teacher, then you can make more progress. But unless you have teachers, your correct practice is your teachers. The correct practice is to observe any object precisely, attentively, at the moment of its occurrence, at present. And another one is, just now I explained you, to note, to observe, to watch whatever mental state arises and sitting as well as in the walking. But in doing daily activity at home too, there may be some strong emotional states such as sadness, worry, anger, and so on. These strong emotional states must be observed, must be watched, must be noted until they have disappeared. Actually, in the daily activity, you should not pay any attention to thoughts, ordinary thoughts, thinking, wondering, imagining. But these strong emotional states must be dealt with so that they can disappeared. If you do not note mental states such as thought, thinking, wondering, imagining, planning, seeing mental pictures. Then this thought will become bigger and bigger, larger and larger. Then it may create some undesirable things in your mind. Then you may go astray. So to avoid that, you should not fail to note any thought, thinking, wondering, imagining, planning, seeing mental images, and so on. Then another question, Sierra, if all of us, all the people in the world, overcome the desire for existence, the human race would slowly disappear from the earth, as no more children would be born. So what then? How can one look at it in inspiring way? Yes, if the desire for existence for human beings has totally disappeared, has been uprooted by the realization of a mental and physical phenomena, not only human race, but also all living beings will disappear from the earth. Very good. Don't worry. Don't worry about it. You see, the world is full of sensual pleasure and sensual desire. Never all the people cannot disappear from the earth, but because they have, they are full of a great deal of a desire for existence. Don't worry about it. This question is a Lanka. Don't worry about it. Another question. In reading, conditioning is mentioned often. Could we please have a few words on condition? Thank you. Yes, condition is the cause. The most of the time in the book on Vipassana meditation, condition, the word condition is mentioned as cause. So when you say, when you note intending, lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing, intending, lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing, it's an intention that causes the action, say the movement of lifting, pushing, dropping. So the intention is a condition. Lifting movement is its effect. The intention is the condition. Pushing movement is its effect. Then intention is the condition, and dropping movement is its effect. So condition, when it's used in most of the book on Buddhism, on the Vipassana meditation, it's used in the sense of a cause. Then another question, how can karmic force arise from actions which originate in mental constructions and volitions, which are essentially empty and impersonal? It seems there's no doer of deeds, either wholesome or unwholesome. Yes. If you have the idea, a person or a doer which does any action, that idea is wrong idea. It's called the wrong view of a personality, individuality. Because actually there's no doer. Only there's action. Say, when you walk, you note lifting, intending, lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing. There, when the concentration is deep enough, you are not aware of the shape of the foot. What you are realizing is just lifting movement, the movements, and pushing movement, dropping movements. These movements are actions. They arise depending on their cause, that's the intention. Without any intention, there won't arise any actions or movement. There won't arise any lifting movement, pushing movement. When there's an intention, there's a lifting movement. When there's an intention, there's a pushing movement. When there's an intention, you need not prevent the foot not to lift from lifting. It's lifted because of the intention. So you are not the person who lifted the foot. It's the intention that causes the lifting of the foot. So there's no doer. Whatever action it may be, there's no doer. Then the karmic force, as you said, arise from actions which originate in mental constructions and volitions. Yes, especially this karmic force comes from volition and mental states. But when the volition has disappeared, that force is remained in the process of the following consciousness. So there's no one who can create this force. It's only volition which the creates or which brings about this force, karmic force. So whether there's no doer or not, when there's a volition, there will be karmic force in the process of consciousness. So this force, as you know, is neither a mentality nor a physicality. So it says no arising and passing away. Only mentality has the nature of arising and passing away. The mentality arises and then passes away. The mentality, physicality also arises and passes away. But this force is not neither a mentality or no physicality. It's so when a person who is crazy with his weapon, with a gun, came into the hall, he doesn't do anything, but he comes into the hall. As soon as he is in the hall, we feel fears. You feel fears. Why? Does he do anything to you? Or does he do any harm to you? No. Yes, he is in the hall. But the force of the madness or craziness affects us. So we fear. That is the force. In this way, every anger has its force. The mentality has its force. You feel when you are angry, then you suppress this anger by any means. Then the anger has disappeared. Even though the anger has disappeared, it's a force in you. You feel it. In the same way, when the volition arises, after it has disappeared, it's a force in the process of consciousness. That karmic force produces, when the time is ripe, produces its result in this existence or in another existence. But it has neither appear, neither arising or nor disappearing, nor passing away, because it's neither a mentality nor physicality. Then here, another question. I have come to believe that it's desirable for Westerners to refuse to visit Burma. Yes, no one requested Westerners to visit Burma. To refuse to visit Burma as a protest of sloth's actions to allow Aung San Suu Kyi's legitimate right to form a government and also to condemn their gross human rights abuses against the Burmese people. Please comment. Yes, I'm not a politician, so I cannot comment on it. Then another question. In the past, I have a very difficult to maintain mindfulness and meditation or daily life once I leave the serenity of retreat. The Western lifestyle is demanding on one's time and energy. Please comment. Yes. To free from this Western life, you should come to Chamyeda, to Burma, to practice meditation. Yes. But you have to, with your time for meditation, you should try at least to spend on meditation, on meditation about at least 15 or 20 minutes a day. Then if you are able to maintain 15 or 20 minutes of meditation daily, later on you will be able to increase the duration of that meditation. And the point is that you should take keenly interested in meditation. That's the point. Then another question. Sierra, do the insight once attained by the meditator have a permanent effect on the consciousness of the person, or can they be somehow forgotten? Yes. insight, say, mundane insights, like supramundane insight, like such as enlightenment, has a permanent effect on the person, on the meditator. If he has experienced some insight in his meditation, unless this insight, mundane or supramundane, has its effect, is a permanent effect on a meditator, there won't be any sotapanna. There won't be any, the first person of enlightenment, the second, the third, and the arahant. And you see, an arahant, when he has completely uprooted all mental defilement through his final experience of enlightenment, then his mind is all the time eternally purified from these defilements. This enlightenment can affect on the arahant as a purification of a mind. In the same way, when a meditator has experienced the insight knowledge, of, especially the higher stages of insight knowledge, such as the fifth jnana, insight knowledge of dissolution, sixth jnana, insight knowledge of awareness of fearfulness, and so on. This insight, experience of insight, have a permanent effect on meditator, because he experiences rising in person away instantly and constantly rising in person away of a phenomena. So he never take any phenomena as a permanent when he recollect his experience. But when he does not recollect his experience, it may not affect on his presence. But when he recollect his experience in meditation, even though he is at home or he is doing his work, that experience comes to his mind as if he is now experiencing it. So it affects our meditators. Then another question. Venerable sir, please share some information about your monasteries in Myanmar and South Africa. I think they would find it interesting. Yes. I think now you have got a pamphlet in which about the information of our monastery in Myanmar is mentioned. We have in Rangoon a meditation center which was established in 1977. Then in that meditation center, we accept anyone who takes interest in meditation and to practice meditation, either Myanmar or either foreigners. Especially, we never charge the foreigners free food, free accommodation, free medicine. Some of the medicines are free if it's available in Burma. Burma is a very poor country. Sometimes some of the medicines are not available. But we have also another meditation center in the forest, in semi-forest, about 30 miles from Rangoon. That forest meditation center was founded in 1995. From the time onward, most of the Thai foreigners practice in there all the year round. In last August, there are about 35 foreign meditators practicing there. And in the Rangoon Center, there are about 15 meditators practicing there. The Forest Meditation Center is quieter than the Rangoon. Rangoon Center is close to a road like this. This one is close to that road. So when the cars goes there, a meditator is disturbed to a certain extent when their concentration is not matured. Okay, concentration is not good enough. When the concentration is good enough, he is not disturbed by such noise as cars. The Forest Meditation Center is called Mobi. Its name is Mobi Chamyeyeda. It's also mentioned in the leaflet. you'll find it. In the leaflet, it mentions that the land is about 10 acres. Now, not 10 acres, it's an increase. Now, 13 acres land. The unusual feature in the center is I put up the meditation platforms under the very big shade trees, about the 4 by 4 feet wooden platforms with the roof, zinc roof, and so on. Now, the some over here, Vincent and Nancy, they practiced there for sometimes about, I think, 1.5 months, 2 months, 2 months. I built up about 60 meditation platforms under the big shade trees there. And also here, you see, you have mosquitoes here. We have also the same. But I provide mosquito nets on each platform. So it's very good. You'll see there. I invite all of you to come there and practice long-term meditation at least 3 months. 2 or 3 months. Peter Roblansky is planning to come there for about 3 or 4 years as a monk when he has retired. He also practiced in Rangoon Center 1 week as a monk. Not 1 week, one wasa, 3 months. No? In the South Africa, the devotees in South Africa invited me to come there and to deliver Dhamma talks, Tikkhana meditation retreat. So I went in 1995. There, most sub devotees, Burmese devotees, are doctors, medical doctors, about 100, together with their families. I told them if they want to contact with Buddhist monks all the time and help their children taught by the monks, they should have a monastery there. So they try collect the fund to buy a monastery. Then last year in June, they bought a house in an acres land. Then I went there and we did inauguration ceremony in June last year. And I consecrated a Sima hall, a meditation hall there, and also I ordained some of doctors, about 60 doctors as higher ordination, and they practiced meditation. So there also, most of Westerners, especially, say, the Boers, white men, who are descendant of Dutch people, take interest in meditation. They have their meditation retreat center too. And also there are some who has no center but take interest in meditations. They, later on, they can come to my meditation center there and practice meditation. Now, in the center, a small meditation hall about this is being built. I think now it's completed. So I'll have to go to the South Africa in January 1999 and spend there 1 month teaching meditation, conducting meditation retreat, delivering Dhamma talk, not only in South Africa, but also in Botswana, another country too. They're very much interesting. You should go there. Quiet, very quiet. Then another question. Sierra, desire and attachment are the cause of suffering, yet it's the desire for freedom from suffering that makes us practice meditation. If we remove this desire, then what would drive the intention for us to practice? Do we also have to remove the desire for freedom from suffering to obtain it? Very good. Yes, you should remove the desire for freedom from suffering so that you will be happy in the suffering of the round of the circle of samsara, rebirths. Yes. In English, the desire is only one sense. So in the Pali language and in the scriptures, we have two words. One is tanha, the other is chanda. Tanha is the desire for unwholesome things. Chanda is a desire for wholesome things. So we never translate chanda into desire. We translate chanda into will, wish, or willingness. But if we want to use the word desire for wholesome thing, we have to say there are wholesome desire and unwholesome desires. Chanda is a wholesome desire. Tanha is an unwholesome desire. But the wish or will or willingness is the most proper translation of the word chanda. So when we say desire for freedom from suffering, we should say the will for freedom from suffering. So the will for freedom from suffering, the will should not be removed. The will must be increased gradually. And the 37 factors of the enlightenment, it's called Bodhipakkhya. We have four foundations of mindfulness, four kinds of energy, and the four kinds of the base of accomplishment. Four foundations of mindfulness is called Satipatthana. The four kinds of energy is called Sammabdana. And the four bases of the accomplishment is called Adipada. Out of four Adipadas, Chanda is there. Chanda is a will or wish. Then Virya Adipada, energy. Citta Adipada, consciousness of mind. Vimansa Adipada, insight or wisdom. When you have these four bases of the accomplishment, then you are sure to accomplish your work. So there, without will or wish, you do not practice meditation. Because you are willing to get free from suffering, you are willing to practice meditation. That will is a chanda, not tanha, not desire. So if desire is divided into wholesome and unwholesome, tanha is unwholesome desire, chanda is wholesome desire. Unwholesome desire must be totally removed, completely removed. Wholesome desire must be abundantly developed, improved, not to be removed. So here what you should do is to know the difference between tanha and chanda. Desire for unwholesome thing is tanha. Will or wish for wholesome thing is chanda. Yes, is enough? Then another question. Venerable Sierra, will you speak about compassion? How it arises? How it helps in the path to wisdom? How to balance the aspects of compassion and wisdom? Yes. In the four sublime states of meditation, there are metta, karuna, mudita, and upaka. Metta is loving kindness, wishing all living beings peace, happiness. Karuna is compassion. Mudita is sympathetic joy. Upekkha is equanimity. So there, the object of compassion is the living beings in trouble. A living being who is suffering is the object of compassion. When a person see another living being who is suffering, either mentally or physically, he feels compassion for that living beings. Then in this way, compassion arises depending on a living being's in trouble or suffering. Then according to the history of Buddhism, the Buddha, when he aspired for being enlightened or being a Buddha, at that time he was a hermit. Though he was a hermit, his ability or his experience of meditation was ripe enough to be arahant, to attain the fourth stage of enlightenment under the instruction of another Buddha, who was called Dipankara. The hermit knew himself. He could attain Arhatamaga, the final stage of enlightenment, under the instruction of this ancient Buddha, Dipankara. But he didn't want to take that enlightenment because he felt a great deal of compassion for the living beings who are suffering in the round of rebirths. So he wants to save these beings and leads him to Nibbana, the cessation of suffering, because of that great compassion. So he strives to be enlightened, to be a Buddha. Then after a great number of existences, then he became a Buddha, Gautama Buddha. After he had become a Buddha, Gautama Buddha, he taught his disciples how to get rid of this, the round of suffering, the circle of suffering, instructing the Noble Eightfold Path, which really leads any living beings to the cessation of suffering. In this way, many living beings, or especially human beings, since the Buddha's the enlightenment until now, have been practicing this Noble Eightfold Path, developing Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the final stage of enlightenment and acquire the cessation of suffering. In this way, some of human beings has been saved by the Buddha by means of his enlightenment. Then that is based on the great compassion of the Buddha. In the same way, if I have no compassion at all, I won't come here. You follow? I would not have come here if I have no compassion for you. And also, I would not have given any Dhamma talk here. I would not have given any instruction for you to practice meditation. I would have stayed in my monastery peacefully. If I have no compassion at all, then this compassion is the source of wisdom and enlightenment. Finished.